On the phone with me right now from Metamora, Illinois, it's Ron Volz. Thanks for joining me, Ron.
Well, thanks, Brian. It's nice to be here.
Ron, just so those of us that are geographically challenged, tell us your proximity then to Chicago.
We are about 150 miles southwest of Chicago, right in the center of Illinois, about 15 miles from Peoria, which is right in the heart.
Where did you actually grow up then, Ron?
I grew up right here. This is kind of funny. When I grew up here, I think the town was a whole 900 people. Of course, we were some of the front runners of rock and roll, the rockabilly group that picked up after the late 40s and 50s swing stuff that happened. So this Metamora was kind of in the middle of farm country, if you will.
What is it that got you interested in rock and roll?
Well, it's funny. I had an aunt, Doris was her name. She had a radio show here in Peoria that I didn't know nothing about as a youngster. But then later on, she bought me a ukulele for Christmas, a little $1.29 uke, and taught me to play three or four chords on it. And I think from that day on, I got hooked.
About that same time, who was it that you were listening to and really liking on the radio?
Oh, well, there were a lot of people. We listened to Boyd Bennett. There was a guy who had a song called 17. Fats Domino was doing Ain't That a Shame. And then, of course, there was this guy named Elvis, which all of us thought, well, this guy's never going to make it. I mean, there's not a chance. And his strange music he was playing. So that was kind of the some of our counterparts, I guess you'd say.
And if I can really take you back, who might have been a couple of the real local-based artists that you were listening to?
Well, there really weren't any local-based artists by name. I think that probably one of the biggest was, well, the same aunt sang with a big band called Glenn Gray. Mm-hmm. I guess my understanding, Glenn Gray Orchestra was a very strong, large band. I mean, you know, the old swing dance stuff. But there wasn't anybody in this area that was really of any name I knew of.
Well, how did you get your group first started at recruiting the members, or how did that all work out?
So I used to do a single in high school. They had a thing called traveling assemblies where you'd go from high school to high school, and I was singing, I think, Andy Williams tunes. I think Butterfly was his big tune at the time. I don't know if anybody remembers that or not. But I walked into a guy's basement one night, and there were a couple of guys sitting down just playing chords on the guitar. And I said, well, hey, why don't we just jam around a while? Well, this other guy, his name was Ron, just like mine. We started singing harmony things. And from there, it was Ron and Ron, and what we called ourselves the Rockin' R's, because we swang our guitars back and forth and kind of jumped around, which was unusual, you know, for those days.
Well, probably not only unusual for those days, but perhaps unusual for that small town of yours.
I'm sure of that, because I think there's probably a lot of people that thought rock and roll was still, you know, not really allowed in this city. This was too wild for our kids.
So it all started in a basement then?
Started in the basement, and of course the other guy's name was Ron Wernsman, and it was his house, and his dad, everybody called Pop Wernsman, he and his wife loved to dance. So we'd play this music and they'd dance. And then one night, this guy walked in, he said he was a drummer, and we said, well, why don't you bring your drums down and we'll form a band. So he brought drums one night, and the rest is pretty much history. We played a lot of dates around locally in the VFW halls, anybody who would listen to us. And then one night, this guy came in and said, hey, we'd like to cut a record. So we ended up in another basement. In Peoria, now we're in the big city, of course, and he had this little record label that was starting called Tempest Records. So we put us in this 4x4 booth. Now, you know, Brian, that a radio station studio is a lot bigger than a 4x4 booth.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think we could get a set of drums of two guys in there without rubbing shoulders. And they had a little Ampex two-track tape recorder, and that's what we recorded on. And out of that, believe it or not, came a song called The Beat, which put us on American Bandstand about a year and a half later. But that's pretty much the beginning of it.
Who was the guy that that contacted you from Tempest Records then?
His name was Steve Clark, who's a young guy, about 27, 28. But you know what's so funny was there was a disc jockey, a local disc jockey named Marty Sullivan, who was at WIRL in Peoria, which was the pop station at the time, who moved into Davenport, Iowa area. And he was the guy that was really responsible, I think, for getting us on American Bandstand. The Rockin' R's was such a small group in the Midwest. We had what you'd call spot hitters. Different radio stations would all play it, and it would pop up here and be number three there, number two there. But it wasn't as if it was a consistently national release. I don't think the Rock and R Records ever got much west of the Rocky Mountains, to tell you the truth.
Mm. This was all going on when you were still in high school then, right?
No, I just graduated. In fact, I was 17 when I graduated from high school, and I think about 3 weeks later we were on the road playing music.
And just for the record then, which high school was it that you went to there?
Well, I went to Metamora High School.
Oh, well, of course!
Oh, yeah.
The basement that you recorded at for Tempest, now that you said was in Peoria, Illinois, right?
Yeah, that was a little subdivision, I'd say at that time probably about a mile outside of downtown Peoria. And he just had built a little recording studio in the corner of his basement.
So then you had the record and you hit the road, you were saying. What types of places did you play?
Some of our first jobs were, it was called the Bossier City Strip in Shreveport, Louisiana. We played a lot of nightclubs to start out with. We played downtown Chicago, of all places, for a rock and roll group in a place called the Brass Rail, which really was one of the old Chicago Dixieland clubs.
Mm-hmm.
We played most of these nightclubs, and then they come up with some of the tours. They had one tour called The Beat, named after the song, and we probably worked, everywhere from South Dakota to upper Pennsylvania, but they booked us all across the Midwest and into the East. And then we also did a bunch of the Shower Star shows with guys like Bobby Darin and the Flamingos and Day Baby Cortez and, you know, numerous names who are already in the industry. Some of our first big jobs, which were really great, was with Bill Haley and the Comets, Conway Twitty when he had his first hit, Make Believe, and then Dion and the Belmonts. There were just a lot of different groups you work with because you're in the industry more than anything else.
Maybe under the classification of not quite as a popular of a show, tell me about the Paul Beard Show.
Oh, listen, Brian. Paul Beard Show was probably, I shouldn't have overlooked that. That was our first major television show. Now, Paul Beard was a car dealer who sponsored a daily movie back then. And he would have this guy pull these cars right in one side of the television studio and park it in the middle, and he'd say, now we have a 1948 Chevrolet with fender, you know, they go through this whole rigmarole. And then the other guy'd say, pull the one on through, Shorty, and it'll go out the other side. And then after he'd do his car spiel, he'd introduce these rock and rollers from Metamora to do a couple of songs. And it was, well, at that time it was probably breathtaking. I think I was only 16 or 17 when we did that. And we had some stuff we did before we really, really took the rock and rolls out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was an interesting television show. I did most of my really interesting shows later on in life. After the rock and rolls, I was in a show group called the Swingin' Lads. And we did a lot of Ed Sullivan shows and Dean Martin shows. And we played Vegas, Reno, Tahoe for 10 years. So
wow.
That was another interesting part of my career, if you put it that way.
Hmm. Well, so you had the hit, The Beat, Crazy Baby, great two-sided record. You followed it up with something called Nameless, backed with Heat. How did that go over?
It got some good chart action. They also had a Nameless contest in the Quad Cities, which is basically Davenport, Iowa, Rock Island, Illinois area up off the Mississippi River. And I remember this. The winner of the contest was this girl, because I got to take her to dinner with all the disc jockeys. And her winning title was Aurora Borealis, the Ars Guitars. And that was the winning name to the song, Nameless. So, yeah, that was a little different, too. But you realize that we were doing more of the all instrumental stuff as rock and ours, more than even vocals, like Johnny and the Hurricanes,
mm-hmm.
People like that. So that was a little different from today's music, for sure.
You were listed as at least half of the writer on most of, or several of the records, you and Wernsman.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, like I wrote Crazy Baby myself, but in those days they usually split the credits. Most instrumental stuff came from ideas, and I think the band participated as a whole on that. You know, add the parts, like the tenor sax player, Art Bielek, like he would come along with a melody line, you know, it would work. I'd come along with chord structure and some of the drum ideas, and the drummer picked that up. So, yeah, well, you had to kind of be creative, and you were flying by the seat of your pants more than anything else.
You did a record on the Stephanie label, which was, I believe that was another local label there in the Chicago area anyway, called Walking You to School.
Yeah.
That had vocals. Who was that on vocals?
Oh, I wrote that myself.
Uh-huh.
In fact, that was really funny. Stephanie Record, I don't think there's many copies of that around. I think you said you had a copy of that.
I do. In fact, it's right in front of me. I'm looking at it, and yeah, there's your name, Ron Volz, under the writing credit. Is that you singing, too?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I had a higher voice in those days. Now, that was recorded right in a radio station where most of the rock and roll stuff, after that initial song was recorded at Boulevard or one of the regular Chicago studios. I remember when they sold us to VJ, we went into a brand new recording studio I think we were in the A studio too. It was a real kick. I remember the piano player's name was Cal Washington. But that was kind of interesting too, being the first white group on a black label.
Yeah. You've had a couple other releases on the Tempest label, and I think they were putting you out in front on those. And then I think one of those also went over to VJ as well. I'm Still in Love with You and Mustang. I think that was on Tempest and on VJ. Is that correct?
It was, and then there was a song called I'm Still in Love with You.
Mm.
Was one that went with Mustang that I think went over to VJ when they shipped us over there. So
okay.
We even did a copy of Please Don't Talk About Me When I'm Gone, and I think we did that simply because there were so many requests from people to do it, and I think it was some of the older people who used to dance to our band originally because of Ron's parents, if I remember right. So we even threw that in.
Were those a little bit more of a pop sound to them?
Yeah, I think a lot of the like Mustang stuff and Hot Bug stuff was pretty much, we were moving more into a Johnny and the Hurricanes bag.
Mm.
Of course, you realize back then, that's when when rock and roll took its first real change from the old backbeat of da-da-da into an actual real push-in quarter note type of tempo. So rock and roll had a great change. If you went from things like The Beat and Crazy Baby and went into Humbug or Mustang, that is actually a total musical change in structure for rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like when rock and roll changed into more of the Beatle format. That was another one of those tremendous changes.
Well, tell me about the American Bandstand appearance.
That was a real kick. Flying into Philadelphia and going to WFIL, and there was Maracucci and Mamarella were the two guys that produced the show, and of course Dick Clark always came over and shook your hand and said, glad to have you on board. And I didn't realize I watched American Bandstand like every other kid religiously for years. And you looked at that whole television set and thought it was a big room. And when you got there, you realized it was a very, very small television studio. To actually meet the Beltrani sisters, that was a big thing for me, Brian, because these girls were the two that danced like crazy you watched every day and fell in love with.
I guess I'm visualizing, you know, you watched it on TV every day after school or what have you, and then you actually got to be
it
and see everything that you used to watch on TV. You were right in the middle of it.
Right. It the same way with the Ed Sullivan Show. Watching the Ed Sullivan Show all those years and then being on that show with people like Judy Garland and Tom Jones, Righteous Brothers, and when that main, it's not a curtain, but that main structure opened up from behind from the Sullivan Show, you were standing on Dave Letterman's stage, you know. And it was just so different from watching it and then doing it. It shocked your system. It's a kind of a combination of fear and joy all at one whack.
Were you performing there as the Rockin' R's?
No, we were then called the Swingin' Lads.
That's right, the Swingin' Lads.
Yeah, I had left the Rockin' R's after so many years of just playing rock and roll. I'm a little more musically structured, and I just wanted something a little more than rock and roll, so along came this show group. And they were doing comedy and dance routines and anything you could think of, 4- and 5-part vocals, had horn sections, things like that. So I joined that group, and we went on to work, like I say, the Vegas, Reno, Tahoe circuit for years and years. San Francisco, Los Angeles, overseas, 3 months a year, Vietnam during the war. We did a half a dozen one-hour television specials in the Far East between Singapore and Tokyo. So it was a whole big change from just rock and roll, because now you could stretch your wings a little bit and just do a lot of things that you never could do in a rock and roll group. And then, of course, you always end up going back to rock and roll.
Well, you know, I'm probably a little remiss in asking, but who were the members, the original members of the Rockin' R's again?
Well, actually, the original members of the group that is known was myself, Ron Wernsman, Ted Miner, and Arthur Bill. Those are the actual four guys. Now, Art came along after the Beat and after we started, but we, here we are starting to grow again as a three-piece band, and we want to do more music because we love music, you know. So naturally, you want a saxophone player, and Art joined. Art was on Nameless, of course, and he was on everything from there out, except, I think, Humbug. Art had gotten off the road, and a guy named Freddie Bowen from, I think, Columbus, Ohio, joined us at that time. There was one or two guys who came in and sat in, a guy named Bill Belshaw. He was probably one of the guys that brought drums down one night and sat in. And I would say he played with the Rockin' Arms, but really wasn't an ongoing member. Hmm. Another guy named Rich, who also played Albo Sax, but the same thing happened. He was there for a very short time. There were a lot of people across our paths in those days, but actually, as Rockin' Arms, the four of us basically were the Rockin' Arms, and the three of us were the originators.
Of all the different things that you did as the Rockin' Arms, is there one specific, I don't know if I want to call it an incident, but one specific experience that stands out?
There's actually two that I can think of. One was working with Bobby Darin, unbelievable individual. We were working at National Guard Armory, and before we went on, Bobby Darin got up on there in this dressing room. Everybody dressed together, great big long dressing room. All the acts are down there, and they had like picnic tables in the middle to sit at. And Bobby Darin got up on this picnic table and gave this unbelievable speech on your National Guard that had everybody just rolling on the floor.
Hmm.
Funniest guy in the world, and you know Bobby Darin, you don't think he was being funny, but he was very funny. And I think the other real memorable incident would be we were working a show in Cincinnati. I can't remember where it was. It was in a big high school auditorium where they had built a stage out in front of a stage. And they had this monstrous rope with about 12 cops holding the kids back. And we went in and we were doing our show, and I got this bright idea of jumping down off the stage into this space between the kids and the stage. Big mistake. 12 cops got trampled. It was unbelievable. This is unbelievable, Brian. They stormed the stage. Instruments got trampled. Lost half of our shirt. It was running in fear. Now, that always stuck with me, probably more than doing the show on top of the drive-in theater where it was raining so hard you couldn't step off the boards or get electrocuted. But those are probably the two I remember the best.
I've seen a couple of the promotional pictures out on the websites that show you guys. If I was to guess, and if I was to have actually been able to see one of those shows, I suspect you guys were pretty wild up on stage. I mean, am I anywhere close?
We were really active. We're the type of guys that were swinging upside down on anything that would work. If we're in a nightclub, there was nothing to walking down the bar with his saxophone and everybody following. We would come off the stage and do the most ridiculous things. Yes, we were. We were pretty wild. I remember one night we did this type of scenario, and Ron Wernsman, who was in bass player, decided to jump on top of a jukebox, went right through the top of the jukebox, and hit that thing, cut himself, his rear end. We had to tape stitch his buns together to finish the show while the blood ran out the bottom of his pants. I mean, yes, we were pretty wild, I guess, as a rock and roll group.
Well, tell me, Ron, what are you doing these days?
Right now, I'm sitting in my recording studio. I still have a lot to do. I had a recording label up in Nashville for about 10 years called River Records. Still have the label. And at that time, I moved into the Christian contemporary part of music. I had five artists. The number one artist was my younger brother, who was a lead singer with a group called Petra for 9 years.
Yeah, I've heard of Petra.
He was one of the original Petra guys, and he and the other guy, Bob Hartman, basically owned Petrified Productions. And he left Petra, I think, in 87. I think in 86, he asked me to manage him in 87. I started managing him, then I formed the label. I had five artists. I did that for a good number of years, along with a couple of other business interests. I had in electronics. I had an electronics store for about 15 years. Had a nightclub for 5 years in the Hilton Hotel. And right now, I'm actually running a monument company. And plus, I still record. I've got a new country artist coming online with an album. Just getting ready to finish that one up. You know, Brian, you just keep going till you go. You just don't stop, man. You just keep going, you know. So, and the rock and R stuff has always been, like I think I emailed you, the Blasters came out with Crazy Baby last year on a CD and a DVD, which they sent me, which was called The Shout Factory.
Yeah, yeah.
That produced that and whatnot for him. so it's part of Warner Brothers. But some of the rock and roll stuff still comes around. I found probably a half a dozen albums stateside and a lot overseas with rock and roll on it. In fact, on one album, they even used the rock and roll picture on the front of the album. It's the kind of thing you just have to have, I guess, a love for the old style of music before we got into all this new electronic wizardry, which we have now, which is wonderful, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really enjoy. And there's a lot of people that still remember that stuff and can identify with it. And of course, it was part of us all growing up, which is hard to forget.
Yeah. Well, Ron, thank you so much for taking some time out tonight of your busy schedule and talking to me about the Rockin' R's.
Paul, Brian, it was delightful, and you just walked me down memory lane. I sure wish you well on your show, and I'm looking forward to hearing this. Some of the stuff you play. And remember, Rockin' R's will be there forever.